This is Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, the radio program that challenges the anti-aging cultural narrative for women in midlife. Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous is produced at CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus-based community station at Simon Fraser University, which is located on the unceded ancestral homelands of the Squamish, Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam peoples. We broadcast a new episode on the second Wednesday of the month between 10 and 11 a.m. I am Robin Erickson, and I talk with women who are aging outside the beauty myth and into their power, honoring their experience and celebrating their strength. This is episode number 8 of Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. And my fabulous guest today is Charlotte Sistacy Farrell, who is a volunteer programmer here at CJSF and the host of Speak Up on Friday mornings. You might recognize her voice when we start talking. She is also an author, poet, speaker, videographer, and international business collaborator, and is currently a new podcast, or is currently coordinating a new podcast project with the 411 Senior Center called Powered by Age. Welcome to the show, Charlotte.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Hold on. There we go.
Thank you for inviting me.
Let's get right into things here this morning. When I named the program Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, I recognized that those three things are a threat to the patriarchy. To be feminist, to be 50-ish, and to be fabulous. And I'm always asking the women who I have on my show what their own triple threat is. What are those things that make you a superpower in the world?
Well, I'm a lifelong learner, and I learned that people enjoy things that I teach them. So I teach people pretty much all the different things that I learn. I also love to talk. I speak up, and I prod other people to speak up about the issue. Speak truth to power.
And that's fabulous. A great superpower. Yeah.
Fabulous. I have purple and burgundy hair. Fabulously ungray.
Indeed, your hair is always fabulous. In the lobby before we started talking on the microphone, you also commented that one of your superpowers was being creative.
Yes, I come from a family, a large family. My grandmother and grandfather were very creative people, and they would make something out of nothing. So there weren't any paper cups here this morning, so I was looking, what can I make a cup from? And there was a ladle, and it deliciously served water. But I also, in working with projects, bring in creativity, think out of the box. Sometimes that is a threat to people who are very bureaucratic. I've worked in bureaucracies, and sometimes people say, why can't you just follow the directions? I do follow the directions, but I put a little flair or a little spin, or just try and see what other directions a thing can go rather than just straight down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're right. Some people can really take that as kind of a threat if they don't see in the same way, or, you know, if their process isn't the same as yours is. I have that same superpower.
Yes.
You know, and it can really serve me well in a lot of instances, but as you say, Sometimes if it doesn't follow that same trajectory that, that another person is on, they might feel a little bit taken aback or suspicious, maybe.
Yeah. I think it's a great thing, though, for women in business, because my grandmother had chickens. She was a strong woman. My grandfather was also a very strong man. They put into me that desire for learning, because every day I had to teach them something I learned. But also, if something called for potatoes and peas, and she didn't have peas, she'd use beans, you know, and I started from a toddler seeing different ways that she would create things. She made medicines. The dog would go out and get into scraps with raccoons or something, and she would paste and tape them up. And so really that interest in how you can make things better and use both what God's given you and what you learn to make something new.
Yeah, I really like that. And some of those ways are being forgotten.
Yes.
In this time of our living, when, you know, we can just go and get so many things that we need, but also the things that we don't need.
Yes, and I think that's, you know, one way that that relates to me to Black History Month with my grandparents. It was very important. Different things that she taught me as a child, like starting to cook when I was a toddler. So each of my three children, I started them with doing something where they know about plants. I have people that have no idea, you know, what's in squash or what's a tomato or what you do with this or that. So that was something that I passed on with teaching them. And then my grandsons, each of them know how to cook. They could make themselves a meal. They don't have to depend on skip the dishes to bring them something at a high price that would feed a family, you know, for a lot more. So I think being able to teach other people how to take fabric. We had some uncles that were large. My aunts took their pants and made me pleated skirts, which I didn't like. I had these durable pleated skirts that nothing on earth could tear up. But when they were really popular, and in junior high, I already had them because, you know, they had created them from my uncle's pants.
Right. Yeah. I wore very homemade clothes, too, because my mom was a sewer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a way to save money, but also to be fashionable.
Yes.
You know, back in the day. You know, you could have the colors that you liked, you could have the style that you like, you could have the length that you liked, because we're a tall family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it kind of worked in the opposite way, where, you know, we needed the extra 2 inches on things so that, you know, our pants were long enough or our sleeves were long enough, and making them at home, we could have what we needed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, my mother and a friend would go to Macy's had these fashion shows, and they would invite us. And I would be so excited because I would always have in my head, we're going to go down on the floor and buy the clothes. They would go to the third floor where there were patterns, and everything that was in the fashion show, they would make. And that also related to a business, because at different times, you know, either when my mother was on maternity leave or just different times, she made all of the costumes sometimes for the play at school, or she had customers at church for outfits. So that frugalness and creativity was also so profitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to change direction just a little bit, because one of the things that I do on this program is invite women to talk about three particular things or three specific things. And I love it because the answers that I get from all of my guests are so unique and individual, but really kind of point to how, as when we age, we can really start to tap into those life energies that are so rich. And so my first question is all about daring. And whether or not you consider yourself daring, And how you might see yourself as daring.
I am daring. In fact, when I went from Toronto to live in LA for a while, right, my children said, remember, you can't be out at 2 o'clock in the morning exploring things. So I am curious and will follow, you know, when I'm traveling. I want to see where the people go, not just, you know, what the tourists have. I go off and take bus rides or, you know, talk with people. But also at retirement age, I dared to do something that had been a deferred dream, to go to film school. I was the oldest child. Growing up, if I had said I was going to go to film school, they would have hung me upside down outside the house because it wasn't practical. And at that time, my guidance counselor took me down to Kansas State University. She told me the only black writer in Kansas City that she knew had gone to writing, you know, for a career in writing, was writing ads that, you know, that they just, she just pretty much said, what you should do is go and get a degree in nutrition. Since you could cook, don't do cooking. That is stereotypical. And so I did end up, you know, being a dietitian and writing a news column on the side. But at retirement age, I, after having paid off student loans, took on a new student loan and went, and I did get a second bachelor's degree in video production and digital cinema. And, you know, in Los Angeles and in Hollywood and in Canada, too, they tell you, you know, when you're 50, it's done. So if you started in this career young, in one class, a man actually said, you know, it's no use. But I have been able, I dared to continue to go on. I dared to get a golden tassel, and I dared to make two films that got some honorable mention at festivals. So that was one of my daring things, to go against the grain of what they had projected for what a woman, particularly a black woman, post-50 could do in the media. And
absolutely. And what a great story. I want to know how that kind of made you feel. You know, by sort of going against the grain, but also achieving your dream, finally.
It was, I guess, because I'm an in your face kind of person. I picture Lisa Leslie going down and dunking a ball, making the backboard ring. But to each of the people, our instructors, they thought they were older than I was. And so listening to them talk about what couldn't happen, you know, I just endeavored to make it happen. I also find it's helped me to teach other people with this project of teaching seniors how to do podcasts. The technology, technological things like those three computers you have in front of you and the boards, they were challenging. And I had eye surgery. And so it made me really push to get the accommodation that was necessary, because mm-hmm. they weren't making allowance for it. They were just rolling ahead. And sometimes that boldness to challenge things that they particularly say older people can't do, to tell somebody, slow down. I hit an instructor's hand because he took my mouse. I told him to stop taking my mouse to show me and tell me what to do. But, you know, I think it was just standing my place, that I had a right to be there and that I could learn. And then I would sometimes do something over the top or different that would, a lot of people were doing, you know, nice stories or entertainment stories. I did a story about homelessness. I did a story about some social issues. And I developed a level of respect for the kinds of stories, you know, that I did and still do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hear two kinds of daring in that story also. The one of standing your ground, you know, can be considered kind of a daring act, and to really know what you need and what you want out of a situation, which I think partly comes with age, you know, and the ability to sort of know and speak your mind, right?
Right. And, you know, when you talk about speaking truth to power, this week there was a town hall meeting at the 411 Center, and people were talking about issues, and many people mentioned this new thing where they're told that their physical has to take place. You know, they only have 15 minutes. If they go further than 15 minutes, they'll be charged. Well, I had a doctor that had done her whatever she was going to do at the computer, and she was about to leave, and I actually said, "Would you sit down, please?" And she was so shocked, you know, that I said that. I said, "I'm not finished. You know, this is something that I am interested in or need to know about." So just not cowering under. Just because it says that doesn't mean that you can't challenge it. And then the other thing is a number of people are going to be writing letters that if there is something that people do that just doesn't make sense, you know, that we have the power to write about it. So I think that I have, I won't say I'm a rabble rouser, but I believe in democracy. You know, on my show I say, you know, it's a participatory democracy, and if we don't participate in it, then democracy goes to hell in a handbag or a briefcase. And so encouraging other people to speak up and to present alternatives to what they say is this is the way it is.
Yeah. And that was the other little piece of daring that I was pulling out of the story was, you know, to sort of stray from the script in terms of doing things and covering issues that are outside of the norm, you know, looking at things that are different from your colleagues or from your cohort can also be considered kind of a daring act.
Yes. Sometimes people don't want to play with you. But I also learned, I never accepted the term nerd, but the lab used to be open 24 hours at the Santa Monica Art School. And so I noticed the people that would be there at 2 in the morning, and they would have this thing. Every time we had a project, they would say, form teams. Well, the first time I got on a team with some other people who didn't do their work, and I got this lower grade, so I said to the instructor, "But this isn't fair." He said, "Next time, get a better team." So every time before he got the words out of his mouth, form teams, I was already headed toward two people that I knew were nerds and say, "Will you be on my team?" Let's be on a team. So that's just another way of finding other people, you know, that are ducks in a chicken coop or something. I'm trying to think of what else is on the water. Quack, being a goose among ducks.
Yeah, for sure. Finding your tribe is definitely helpful in terms of getting things done, and I think also feeling a little bit more courage to let your daring out. You know, if you're standing with people rather than standing completely alone, it's a little bit easier to feel brave.
Yeah, that very much in my life since I was 10, I was involved in the civil rights movement, and it was very influential. The people from the Southern Christian Leadership Coalition went to churches all across the country showing you how to lock arms, you know, if you were being just being attacked, or how to sit down and not be pushed aside, being able to really feel the spiritual connection, connecting with people through songs, connecting with people through prayer, so that not just being the odd person out, but also finding other people who were challenging the laws that were in place and are not being enforced, even in a place like Kansas. Kansas was supposed to be a middle state, non-segregated state, and I went to a high school that was segregated from 1906 until about 1976. But you know, having parents who were outspoken, having had grandparents who were outspoken, you know, I've felt comfortable taking part in marches, taking part in letter writing campaigns, being gassed. Oh yes, with the anti-war movement, the women's movement, black movement, the movement to get black studies programs at Wayne State and on other college campuses. I feel very much about risking whatever, if it might be, you know, getting hurt or going to jail, to stand up with other people with things that, you know, challenging things that are not right and that it shouldn't occur in a just, sane society.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I want to take a pause and play a song, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about curiosity. You brought two songs with you to play. Which should we hear first, and do you want to introduce it?
Oh, Paying Tribute to Your Spirit Mama. And that song was, it was a healing, poetry is a healing form for me, but my mother passed away with cancer, and my sister and I had a whole month that we stayed in her room, and she, one of the things she would say is, you know, when I'm gone, don't be standing up over me crying. But it was painful. So this particular poem I wrote about a year after I was driving a day, started crying, I pulled the car over, and when I got home, I wrote this poem, and it was just tributing the different ways that she influenced by us as her kids. So. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama. Paying tribute to your spirit of love, laughter, argument, and encouragement. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama. Now that you've gone, I told you that I loved you, but it's not enough. The words are too few for the essence of you. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama. For your tireless hands that fashion new dresses when I long for the ones at Macy's that cost more than Daddy made. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama. Your endless treks to sales, downtown, overtown, to the plaza, to wherever you could get 5 pairs of shoes, 5 sets of clothes, 10 days of groceries on a postman's bi-weekly pay. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama, for facing freezing snowstorms, spending lonely nights at home while self-centered kids did all over the country roam. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama, for the PTA meetings you attended, the dances you and Daddy chaperoned while other parents groaned. I'm paying tribute to your spirit. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama, for ever reminding us to slow down and smell the roses, do one thing at a time. Wait upon the Lord and hear the quiet ways and solutions He whispers at sunrise. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama, for the radiant way you face the ravishes of a painful, prolonged death, defied depression and refused to cry when the last strands of your hair left, set your vision on where you were going rather than on where you had been. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama, for the indirect beauty you let flow from within, the loving way you dismiss me to go back to my family and accept the end. I'm paying tribute to your spirit, Mama, for crossing the gulf between your heavenly rest and this earthly test, to give me answers to the questions, to stand at the finish line and cheer us on, to coach the matches that the enemy would have won. I'm just paying tribute to your spirit, Mama. Mama L. Jean Burleson. Nana. Auntie L. Jean. Ms. L. Jean. Paying tribute to your spirit. I'm just paying tribute to your spirit, Mama. Just paying tribute to your spirit, Mama. Yeah, Mama, I'm paying tribute to your spirit.
You're listening to Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. My name's Robin Erickson, and my guest in the studio today is Charlotte Sister C. Farrell, who was the voice on that song, as well as my guest in the studio. Welcome back, Charlotte. That was a song you were saying that that you wrote in tribute to your mom, and one of the ways that you use your superpower, creativity, to sort of change the trajectory of your thinking and feeling, and to really be able to sort of manifest things in a different way. So I think that's great that we got to play one of your songs.
Thank you. Thank you. I was able to pay tribute to my mother, because a lot of the things that we talked about, being curious and being bold, I learned from her.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about being curious now, so maybe we'll hear some stories about your mom. Yeah, curiosity, as I said at the beginning of the show, is another one of those sort of elements that I think, as we age, is sort of a critical factor in being able to live and continue to live life to the fullest. And so I'm interested to find out from my guests about how curiosity lives in you, and whether or not you feel like you're curious, and what are those things that you're curious about?
They say curiosity killed a cat, but we have two cats, and they ponder in all kinds of things, and they haven't died yet. But really being curious about health. I did my first degree and worked as a health educator, health promotion officer for the city of Toronto. And then I got hurt. I was hurt in on a minus 28 degree day by somebody who was stressed out and knocked me to the side. But the doctor's prognosis, it would have made me a drug addict. And so the things that I would sit there talking to this man, and he would be writing, and I thought, if only that pen could heal me. And then he would give me prescriptions for pills, prescription for things to stop the side effects of the pills. And so I had heard a chiropractor speak, and people had always, you know, gave a lot of disdain, the traditional things, oh, that stuff doesn't work. So I went to see Dr. Don Fitzritson, bless his soul, in Toronto, a great homeopath, chiropractor, and teacher. And so he started working with me with energy medicine. I had a crushing headache, and he showed me a way that I could use visualization. And so being curious about whether the different things that he was telling me to do would work really helped me, because I discovered, yes, I could lift that pain within 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes time. I learned about neuromuscular stimulation, something that heard the words, was just kind of remotely interested about, but then studying Tony Robbins and then, you know, going into L.A., I had a fairy godmother who was an actress, and she had experienced having falling through a stage on Broadway. Her name was Virginia Capers, and she had a chiropractor there who had put her back on her feet without surgery on her back. So I have had these different things that have happened to me. I had a brain hematoma, you know, much stuff happened to my back. But in delving more, asking questions, studying with people, how does energy medicine work? And then studying with spiritual teachers, Reverend Michael Beckwith, Ricky Byers Beckwith, on how can you use what's within your heart? What can you use within your brain? How can you make things go differently in your body? So I've just deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper things have happened, but I've been moved from curiosity to assurance. Curiosity, when I was going to have a biopsy, Reverend Michael said to me, be happy that the doctors are interested in that part of your body. Be happy that you have the insurance to get it. But know that doctors can only give a diagnosis. God holds the prognosis. And so I've had, sometimes when I've been away from here and I've been, you know, dual over to the States for different things, I'm just happy to have my little biopsy and so happy to tell people it was benign, it was fine, everything is good. But I've also, the curiosity of what would happen, things that my grandmother would do in the bowl, that you beat an egg until it becomes a particular color. You use a tablespoon of baking soda for every 3 cups of flour. So I had that curiosity. What would happen if you use this much instead of that much? So I've made some interesting, I won't say mistakes, interesting alternate things. But I'm really interested in holistic health, interested in learning more, but also teaching more people about it, interested in and curious about like the things that we're looking at here, how to reduce the number of people on opiates. Is it possible if you're using some of the medicines derived from hemp or cannabis, are those things more healing? Are they healthier for the body? Is there a reduction in opioid addiction? You know, how can we stop people from being so dependent on a system that gives you drugs to tell your brain that you're not hurting, rather than looking at the other things of a help. Poetry, I've used poetry and been curious about how that could help with people that were dealing with depression. I've done exploits into each of these things, brain health, reducing depression, making people feel happy about life, particularly how poetry can be used in these different forms. So the curiosity, people say, you know, will it help with this? Well, I've done it with people who are in sobriety. I've done it in a maximum security boys' prison. With the boys in a maximum security prison, I sit 2 hours for a poetry workshop. Yes, and they wrote 30 poems. And most of the poems were about their mother. So, you know, being curious, I'm kind of curious in those areas of creativity. You know, Canada right now is really promoting curiosity and helping, creativity, but creativity and curiosity are closely linked, because mm-hmm. you're wondering what would happen if. Mm-hmm. And so I am very much collaborating, you know, curious about what happens when you collaborate with a 7-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 70-year-old. What can happen? And so that's kind of the ways that my curiosity goes.
Yeah, I like that. And you're absolutely right, you know, in terms of the link between curiosity and creativity. You know, if we lose our ability to wonder mm-hmm. what would happen if you know, we moved A piece to B slot.
Right. Yes.
You know, and, you know, if we wrapped this bow in a different way than, you know, we normally tie our shoes, what would happen, you know? Or if we tied our shoelaces together, what would happen? Yes.
Well, you know, we're using these microphones. It makes you think about what made a person think if you put a cup up to a wall, you could hear what was on the other side. And then, you know, the leaps that go from up-leveling curiosity mm-hmm. to create things within an area like communications or an area like health.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. What are the questions that you still feel like you are seeking answers to? Such a big question, right?
How to get up a hill when snow is hitting your face. I think really, I wrote a poem called Harmony Over Hollering. What are ways that we can find to work together so that people aren't screaming at each other and can work harmoniously? I'm really curious about different ways of bringing about harmony, because a lot of times our devices, like a phone, I said... some ungodly things to my phone, because they've changed how you cut it off, and I can just, you know, but I think I'm really curious about what does happen. There's a thing talking within metaphysics, within spirituality, about holding the high watch. What does happen if a number of people at 2 o'clock in the morning are up and just thinking about a happier world, thinking about a peaceful world? Can that create a shift? What happens? I did have a curiosity. I went to a school under the hat of a poet, and these kids were interested in Rosa Parks. Well, I told them about Rosa Parks, and then I had some books, and then I wrote a poem. And so these little kids began to write poems about peace and justice. You wrote 100 poems, but I wonder what would happen if they put their hands over their hearts first and just meditated a few minutes, because the lesson plan that the teacher had, it was like an hour and a half for them to finish and get one poem. So I had them put their hands over their heart and just meditate, think about their heart, but just, and then visualize some one thing they wanted to write about. And 15 minutes, these kids had a poem, including a little girl who had been at the behavior table and said, I can't do that. And I told her, what do you think about it? She said her cat, she wrote a beautiful poem about her cat. So that, what would happen if? I know that there's an actress that started meditation classes. She went in, I think, and started at one school. Now across a part of Southern California, there are classes that do meditation. So what would happen if we shift some things so that people do have periods where they're reflecting on peace or harmony and move out into the world with that, rather than just hearing a lot of noise or hearing things that are hateful tones or arguments, you know?
That's a really great thing to be curious about, especially in the world where we see so much division, mm-hmm. you know? And people are hollering at each other,
yes.
you know, to the point where I think they don't even hear what everybody is hollering about. And even the people who are hollering maybe the same things are blocking it out, because it's just this cacophony of noise and a racket. What it makes me think of is the sort of old adage of, you know, if we really want to see change in the world, we need to be able to sit with our enemy in the canoe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, and so how do we get there? How do we take hollering to harmony? And if we're not able to listen to one another, and if we're outside of that curiosity about why you think what you think and I think what I think, and unable to share hospitably,
right?
You know, then it will always just be hollering, and we'll never get to that piece where we have understanding and hopefully harmony, you know, but at least understanding.
Right. Now, I think that's kind of related too with the different strategies people are using in anti-bullying when they talk about the bystander. If you're the one that says stop, or as you did one day, you said, "Take, unhand that woman." Being the person, sometimes when everybody is just talking about the negative or worst case scenarios, doing what's called three Cheerios. The first one, you attempt to say something different to the person. The second, you attempt to switch the conversation. And the third, you just say Cheerio and step out of the midst of it. But sometimes being the person that steps in, I taught university students 20 years, and I had in one class two well-dressed young black women, and they had moved from across the seats from each other, arguing about a point about something, and they were getting closer and closer together, and I stepped into the middle of them, and one's name was Angel, and I said, "Remember what your name is." And it shocked attention, you know. Another time, and then another person, another student, asked her to come outside, and also had that role of talking to de-escalate. And so it could have gotten to worse. So I think sometimes just having that boldness to speak up, to maintain a level of safety, but also to speak up or draw people's attention to this is going down, it's further and further. If we keep down this rabbit hole, we're going to be in a whirlpool. We're just going to be in a fight. People will be in a fight. I talk sometimes to students, and I wrote a poem called A Murder on My Street. I lived on a street in Redondo Beach, which is about peaceful community. And one day I heard this bang, bang, bang. And so first we, ducked out, and then we called 911, and then dozens of police swarmed around the thing. And what had happened is two men were arguing in a 7-Eleven. And then they got into the cars, and one of them just drove up by the other one and shot into the car and killed the father and nearly missed, the baby that was also in the car.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was just, the people in interviewing the store manager and so forth, it said that no one really said anything, to try and de-escalate these guys while they were in the store. So they just went out in that charged energy. So I know a teacher that started singing. Once people were arguing and, just becoming ridiculous. And she started singing a song. They started laughing at her, but it broke that moment. So mm-hmm. I think getting harmony over hollering is both talking with people about how to stay on point, stay around the issue and not around people. People will get to a point where they'll say, I don't like your stupid hair. Well, I don't like your whatever nose. And then they totally forgot what they were initially talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And hours, now they're the things that will go on for hours on Twitter or go on for hours on different social media where people are just arguing around one thing when there's so many more broader things. The antidote to the situation people are sometimes hollering about is missed because they've just gotten into such heat about one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Getting back to the curiosity of what that seed is through creativity.
Right. And respecting. I mean, because also when people argue, just being able to say, I respect your right to feel differently than I do. So let's move on because we're not going to change each other's minds. So let's just... respect that you have a right to feel the way that you feel and go on.
Yeah. Time to take another song break here. Do you want to introduce this this last song that we'll hear?
Yes, living life like it's golden. I think there's other people that we know that are in the golden years, that being able to really treasure that time, to not take all the dire forecasts people had for us and, you know, get into business. Some women are, starting businesses. And because we've mastered a lot of life's pitfalls, we can really enjoy life like it's golden. We have that right, and we have that ability. So I love this song by Jill Scott.
My name is Robin Erickson. My guest in the studio is Charlotte Sister C. Farrell, and we are talking about what it means to be in the golden age.
Yes.
We've covered what it feels like to live with daring and what it means to be curious. And now I want to move the conversation briefly in the last few minutes of the show to that big word that often comes with age, wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how do you live with wisdom? Do you live with wisdom? Where did that wisdom come from?
Well, some of it was from reading because my grandparents were deprived of having their education. You know, as young people growing up in Texas, my grandfather's parents had been sharecroppers, and even though the laws in post-slavery times said that people should be able to get an education, the teacher at the school told his mother that he would go crazy if he went every day because he was too smart. So that meant he had to work in the field for 10 cents a week, plowing and seeding. And so it was very, anyhow, they migrated from Texas to Kansas. And he and my grandmother had 6 children of their own, raised 2 others from family members. But one of the things that he regained his education from, every child had to teach him one thing that they learned every day. And so from having to do that from an early childhood, I've really treasured knowledge. And so I've been engaged in some conversations, like with the Wise Ones and the Senior Golden Group at Agape, of really being happy about the things that we know. There's so much from the negative side when you are that a forecast from you when you pass 50 that you might be at risk for Alzheimer's or you might have a senior moment. Well, there's several people who are saying, don't say it's a senior moment. It's a moment. Your brain has so many facts that you've had. It's sorting for the most appropriate one. And so it might get back to you, but there's a rich treasure house up there.
Ain't that right?
Reading about people like Mary McLeod Bethune and Sojourner Truth, who traveled across the country, not only speaking up for freedom, speaking up for things for Black people, but speaking up on women's rights. You know, Sojourner Truth was not only an abolitionist, but was one of the suffragettes. And she asked that question, ain't I a woman too? Because they at a conference, they recognized all of the white women who were speaking, and the reporter, you know, instead of holding the door open for her, he just kind of let it drop. So that knowledge of both things that have been accomplished by people within my family, people within Black cultures around the world, you know, the inventions that are there, those things make me excited about what I know, and knowing that there's a 92-year-old man somewhere in British Columbia that's teaching people how to skate. So I think that where people had that put down of boomer, they should have a second thought to know that we are the people who were in the group that put a man on the moon. We are in the group who figured out a lot of the stuff that's around, moving from computers that took up a whole room to these computers that people have in their pockets. So I think just that golden of sometimes just taking stock of how many things we've learned. We had to learn how to diagram sentences. So where people, they have everything on YouTube almost starts with an advertisement for Grammarly. We do the source for Grammarly.
Right, yeah.
So I think just golden of spending some time every day to really treasure what you do know. If people put down or make light of it, you could even have a knowledge book or a gratitude book and just check off and remember for yourself the things that we know. We've gone through a generation raised by people who had gone through the Depression. We have gone through a few collapses of, you know, oil. And so, and we survived. We survived in the 70s, you know, when gas was so high. We survived a lot of things. So I just think that I'm rich in knowledge, and the knowledge just isn't out there aimlessly, that it's something that we do have to pass on to the other generations and have respect for each other. There's some things that they can do faster, which is great, but that we know the basis, the formula that this fast thing was based on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really love the having to teach your grandfather something that you learned every day, and that has become part of how you know what you know.
Yes.
Right? Because there's also something that really instills what you know when you teach it to someone. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you have to translate that thing that you know to someone else, it really begins to live its life in you in a bigger way than if you just take it in.
Yes, and then, you know, peer-to-peer, the collaboration. I love the fact that collaboration is one of the things that we're using as a business strategy, but it's also something that within Canada now, within trying, older people do not want to be called golden. They don't want to be called older. They don't want to be called all these things. So they've said to the Minister of Health, Minister of Culture, have said to people, whatever they call themselves, you need to find ways to collaborate to create services that are relevant. Not, you know, thinking everybody wants to be in doing puzzles or knitting, but there are people that want to learn about things like radio mm-hmm. or how to make television. And so that is a great way of just digging. We have so many rich things, and if we talk to each other, if other people don't have time to talk to us, we can talk to each other, harvest and create new things that we enjoy, because there is money within this group to buy things that, you know, we like.
Yeah. Yeah, that piece of collaboration also, and that, you know, people who are in this age bracket, whether they be men or women or otherly identified, we don't just fit in a singular box
right.
as we did maybe a generation or more ago, that we're a changing and quite changeable dynamic.
As well, even as the baby boomers who changed things with marketing, it wasn't like everybody wasn't the same then. People had different energies, but we did make different changes in fashion, in politics, in a number of things. So it's the same people, that we are diverse, unpredictable, creative, and a treasure trove of knowledge. So we can make all kinds of things that satisfy our demographic.
Yeah. Well, my goodness, you, Charlotte, have been a treasure trove of knowledge and information and little thoughtful gems today as my guest. I want to thank you so much for joining me on Triple Threat, Feminist 50-ish and Fabulous.
Well, thank you. You are a triple threat, so a peer mentor. So thank you very much for inviting me.
I do want to thank my guest, Charlotte Farrell, again for sharing their daring curiosity and wisdom with us. And thank you, of course, for listening. You can connect with me at Aging with Imagination on Facebook, where you'll find links to the audio archive for this show. You can also find them at cjsf.ca under the program schedule Intravenous by Date. I'm Robin Erickson, and I have been your show host. See you next month when we continue to challenge the anti-aging cultural narrative of women in midlife.